Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we have, I don't know if it's so much news to talk about, but we definitely have rumors to talk about. So that's kind of fun.
It's better than the last couple months, man. Let's do it.
So today we have a World Cup version of the group stage concept. If the NBA opts to go in that direction to expand the playoffs out, they have apparently Pete and I come down on different sides of the 1-16 seeding discussion. So we'll talk about that. And then we were going to have the show kind of devoted to a fun what if of mine that kind of came out by way of The Last Dance. There's a situation here where if, say, Phil Jackson decides not to take a year off and immediately jumps to the Lakers, could the Lakers have had Michael Jordan? And could Michael and Kobe and Shaq have all played on the same team? We've already gone down that road with Magic Johnson. Now we're going to go down with Michael Jordan. So we'll see how that plays out in terms of the conversation that stems from it as well. I do want to have a quick kind of fun hypothetical question. We won't spend too much time on this. You ready? Mm-hmm. Are you a video game guy?
I used to be, long ago and far away. I think so for most of my childhood, it was mostly sports video games. But I think the last non-sports video game, with the exception of one that I played, was Skyrim when that came out in the early 2010s. Mm-hmm. I like that, the Elder Scrolls game. I was into that game for a while. But the only game that I play now on a consistent basis is Civilization 6, I think it is. Sid Meier's series. I love those games. It very much appeals to how my brain works and all that. So I enjoy those. Are you a gamer?
I am. Although it happens like once a day, I would say. The look that I get from Jen when she walks in and she sees me playing my video game makes me reconsider playing video games.
Especially now that you got Avery. Yeah, I'm sure that look has a little extra stank behind it.
Mm-hmm. I have like Avery tied up in a corner over there, and I'm sitting there playing my video game. That's frowned upon for some reason. Yeah,
you got Callie's leash on clipped to the back of Avery's onesie. And she ain't going nowhere. She's fine.
we got Avery a walker today. And nice. She's just kind of lunging backwards. So that's kind of fun to watch. She walks like a lobster swims, basically.
Okay.
and Callie's just watching the whole time. Like, I do you ever wonder if dogs look at babies and say, God, you guys have it easy?
I do want dogs and babies have a fun connection. That's an interesting dynamic. But yeah, I do think that, I mean, it ain't like the dog's got it too much harder in most cases. Let's be honest here.
Well, I just mean from like a developmental standpoint, right? Like a dog has to learns how to walk within weeks, right?
Oh, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like, whereas they're looking at a baby, you're going on a year and you can't walk.
You can't do this yet. Yeah.
How did you make it to the top of the food chain? Like I'd be kind of livid. All right. Anyway, let's jump into, I want to start with the tier concept. This is brought up by Kevin O'Connor of the Ringer. He says apparently this is a conversation that they are having in league offices, and he broke it down to five tiers with 1, 2, 3, 4 teams each, right? And then they would, they would essentially, you'd have one team from each tier in each group. So group one, for example, would be Bucks, Jazz, Sixers, Grizzlies, Blazers. Group two, Lakers, Heat, Rockets, Magic, Pelicans. Group three, Raptors, Celtics, Thunder, Mavericks, Spurs. And group four would be Clippers, Nuggets, Pacers, Nets, and Kings. What do you think about... I'm a soccer fan. I watch the World Cup every single year. I enjoy some of, group stage play, though ties on that stage always kind of rub me the wrong way. How do you feel about the group idea?
I'm okay with it, or I'm semi-intrigued by it in a normal year. This year, I'm not interested in it at all. I think it adds just a degree of complexity that's unnecessary to a situation that's already complex. We'll get to the 1 through 16 as well, which we touched on in yesterday's show. But I think it devalues the regular season that's been played. I don't like how we're acting like we didn't already play, 63 games for the Lakers.
Right.
Like most teams have less than 20 games left on the schedule. Mm-hmm. Let's not act like these standings are somehow invalid. This didn't happen 25 games into the season. You know what I mean? And it's way too convoluted and outside of you don't change things up halfway through. And that's not just a resistance to change. But let me put it this way. In the 1 through 16 ideas, sorry, I'm combining ideas here, but I'm kind of against all of these big changes outside of just do it the straightforward. What do you think Frank Vogel and his staff have been doing last month? Do you think they've been watching tape on the New Jersey or the Brooklyn Nets, right? Who would be the 16th seed right now? On the Toronto Raptors, who we might face in the third round or are they watching more tape on the Clippers and Bucks, right? Or they're watching on Houston, which we would play in this bracket. But just don't change the rules of the game halfway through because the players in the game have been playing it. Even in these weird circumstances, this is gold from a, hey, let's watch tape and get good at the little details that we don't have time to scenario. Mm-hmm. Don't change that for the coaches, for the players. Everybody's geared up and ready to go for it to go a certain way and then it doesn't go that way, even acknowledging that that's already happened, right? From an outside influence standpoint. I just don't like the idea of changing up the goal or the way we get there at this point.
We'll get into more of that later. I mean, I think if they do decide, the group stage is pretty out there, mm-hmm. right? Like at least with 1 through 16, you're still dealing with the series and
it's conceptually similar.
It's close enough, right? It's a pretty different look, but it's close enough. It's close.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
The group stage, just introducing something like this, and a lot of people made the example or use the example of, hey, you guys laughed at the All-Star rules and look how much fun that wound up being, right? And I'm saying, well, you don't want to judge anybody on their best day or their worst. Right, that the All-Star game played out about as perfectly as it possibly could have. And, even that, there were some people who walked away with that. Like Kemba Walker, for example, limped away from that. And Celtics fans are kind of looking at it like, hey, yeah, that was great for competition, but that put our point guard at risk. This group stage thing, it's the kind of thing where if it was brought up in the offseason, and we had more than just kind of conceptual groups that we're looking at, then okay, fine, right? That's we could get there eventually. The 1 through 16 thing, I want to take a quick second. When we come back, I want to talk about what you just mentioned there, the difference in how teams have approached this season versus or even this hiatus versus what it would look like if they went 1 through 16 here. So let's take a quick second. When we come back, we'll do that. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Head on over to builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON and save $10 off that first order. They have 16 amazing flavors, as well as the seasonal ones that I mentioned in yesterday's show. They have 8 that are chocolate and nut flavors, and they have 8 that are chocolate and nut-free flavors. Let's just take a look, though, at one of their bars here and the flavor profile and the nutritional profile that it has. So you have the peanut butter brownie, has 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Another one here, mint brownie, has 15 grams of protein, 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. With nutritions like that and with the taste that these bars have, it's just a no-brainer here. If you're in the market for protein bars and you want to go after some that don't taste like cardboard, then check out BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. Save $10 off your first order, and then spread the word. I will tell you what, my brother-in-law, who's a huge, you know, he's a fitness nut, always makes me feel like crap when we all hang out. But he's huge into protein bars. I introduced him to these. He's been loving them since. He asked for the promo code, used the promo code, and is thrilled with the purchase. And, you know, if you want to continue to spread word, do so by telling people to go to BuiltBar.com, tell them to use promo code LOCKEDON, save $10 off their first order, and enjoy a really cool product. So that's the question I basically asked you on Twitter. Is it like, what team would do anything different in the over the course of the season than they would had they known that 1-16 was on the table? Like, what changes there? And even from the standpoint of the hiatus, if they say, hey, we're going 1-16 here, you have, you know, it is now May 26th. You're going to be seeing these teams on July 15th. You have that much time to prepare yourself for them. I think that's enough for coaching staffs who have nothing else to do over that time to get back to strategizing for that. What's the argument here? What would these teams have done differently over the course of the year other than win as many games as they possibly could?
They would, for one, be watching tape on prospective opponents over this, what will be almost a 4-month hiatus, or probably after, it will be a 4-month hiatus.
It will be.
Once this is all over with, right? What they've been doing so far, we're, you know, over halfway through that, you know, that of course they'll be preparing more for likely, especially with the Lakers, where they're competing for a title, right? And they're looking for advantages against their best opponents. One of them wouldn't change in the Clippers, but with the Bucks, it would. Toronto's a good team, right? That you've got other teams on that side of the bracket, right? From the Eastern Conference standpoint, I think that changes that. Now, is it the end of the world if they do this? I don't know. I don't think that. I just think that there's so much other change that in circumstances in not just basketball, but in life in general, when you've got so much upheaval that you should actually kind of lean on the familiar as much as possible in order for those new things to thrive, the fewer unknown variables possible, the better. I think that this lends yourself to more, there's less familiarity, right, between mm-hmm. the teams. If we play the Nets in the first round, or if, you know, so somebody out East plays a Western Conference team. I just think in a situation where there's already so little familiarity, that's there's value in that.
Yeah. The familiarity thing, I don't know. I still fall back on, like, if the Lakers have to go out of their way to prepare and you know, things change now, obviously, if it's Kevin Durant and Kyrie and the Brooklyn Nets in the 15 seed, then I would say, okay, this is a little odd, right? I wonder if the NBA is going to come out and say that, you know, players whose injuries were going to carry them beyond this year, just from a safety standpoint, let's not bring you guys back on this because we want next year to be as safe as possible too. Right. I don't know that they would do that. I don't even know if I would advise it, but I wonder if people are thinking about it. But, you know, if the Lakers can't get by the Brooklyn Nets in a 2-15 seed, they don't deserve to win a championship. You know,
sure.
and then their next opponent.
It's not about that though. It's not like, it's just respecting the process of what went into it, right? Like, you shouldn't change the rules of the game part of way through, you know?
I guess I mean that already happened. Like the rules mm-hmm. of the game changed when everybody got a 3-month break, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, I think there's something to be said about, you know, you should rely on normalcy to get you through stuff like this. But also, like, the number one reason that was apparently, and this is what the league has always said, other than Eastern Conference teams refusing to vote to reseed the playoffs every year. But one of the other reasons they always point to is the amount of travel that teams have to undergo in order to make a 1-16 reseeded playoffs possible. Right. Like if the if the Lakers, so even in the Lakers against Brooklyn, if this was a normal year and the Lakers were going to have to go up against the Brooklyn Nets, that is what would that be? If that series, for whatever reason, would to were to extend to seven games, that is, what is that, four cross country trips in a 2 week period, roughly? Right. I would understand, you know, if the league said we're not interested in that, you know, putting our players through that, understanding what that amount of travel does to a player over the course of a season, it would be kind of hypocritical for us to go and do that now. But with everybody being in the same place, why not give this a go? You know, why not? Wouldn't that make this situation more ideal to try something like that out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Better from that standpoint. I will certainly grant you that point. I would like everybody to go into the game knowing what the rules are at the beginning of it, right? Mm-hmm. And some of that's been taken away from us with COVID, the COVID breakout. But the travel schedules, it's a fair point regarding, you know, do you go to a 2-3-2 format in that type of scenario? That said, like, what is the value of this to the league going forward if it's just a one-time deal? If it's going to work, it is going to have to have home games at both home teams, right? Like, knock on wood, this is the only playoffs that will ever play at a neutral site with no fans in the stands. Mm-hmm. So for the sustainability of the 1-16 idea, it has to work in with that additional travel. Do you, you know, schedule more off days as a result of the doing that in a regular circumstance? That's a problem for a different year. But in order for this to work going forward, it has to work under circumstances other than these.
Well, I think the premise here, the idea here would be that the product would be so good. And this is where I think the group stage thing comes into play, right? 1-16 isn't a drastic enough change for you to glean much off of how abnormal a circumstance this is. But if you're going to go with this group stage idea and extend the playoff pool from 16 teams to now 20 teams, is that what I, yeah, 20 teams, and include these other teams that would kind of try to play their way into a playoffs they wouldn't normally get to compete in because of these groups, then, you know, if that product is so great, if the result of this product is so great, then you try to normalize that in an incoming season or upcoming season. Whereas with this 1-16 idea, is the product, at the end of the day, you're still going to get each team at, you know, ideally the Lakers are going to play four series, right? Or three series? Four series. Mm-hmm. So ideally the Lakers would play four series no matter what. The actual basketball, sure, the matchups are going to be different, and maybe that is incentive enough for them to say, okay, we tried this in this situation. The matchups were that much more fun over the course of the playoffs that we want to try this out in a normal year where the travel would be worth it to try to work around. And I think that's what they would be doing here. And I think that's why it's kind of fun. I've like made a running joke with Jen that it's been kind of fun to watch Adam Silver experiment with weed over the course of this hiatus.
Yeah, man. It's like, yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at is like, I get it from a, well, this season's fucked up anyway. Why don't we just try some shit, right? Like, there's an argument to be made for that. There's also an argument.
Adam Silver's going to come back with dreads. Like, he's just, right. He's always looking.
Yeah, man. No, it definitely seems like they're trying some things out. I also I think Woj was saying this today about how everybody is politicking and campaigning for the best. You know, like, it's funny I'm making this argument, but when I look at that bracket from a Lakers standpoint, I'm like, Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. Like, right. Let's have Boston and the Celtics and the Clippers cannibalize each other in the second round. Have Milwaukee and the Clippers play each other in the finals or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Go ahead and y'all fuck each other up while we try to get through this side of the conference. You know what I mean? Like, so right. From a Laker fan perspective, trust me, I'm pushing, and I am less against the 16 idea than the group play idea. I think the group play idea is too far.
Yeah.
Out of pocket. Although again, I don't have anything against the creativity of it, or the game should always be moving forward. Like, think about, there used to not be a 3-point line, right? That's back when the Celtics used to win titles. Right. And,
but it's not like during a season, they didn't introduce the 3-point.
Right. It wasn't like all of a sudden, hey, and now like, oh, I hope you got shooters. And now obviously there's no complete analogy to that here. It's not that severe, but I just don't like the idea of changing the rules of the game. Like, let's go into a season with everybody knowing what they're playing for, what the playoffs look like, how that will go. And I think the best way to do that is to essentially treat the season as though there was a big pause button on it. I agree with the idea that not everybody should be there. The teams that are out of the playoff picture, there's, you know, again, if you go to regular format or the 16 format, should it be the 20 teams idea that is being discussed? You know, there's minutia to debate on this. Even once you agree on are we doing 16? Are we doing group play? Are we doing the way it normally goes? That you could still, you know, argue on. And that's what everyone's doing, right? So everybody's making their case to Adam Silver and the league offices to try to get the best version of this. And so I like the idea that everybody's having their say and that they're going to be considering all perspectives. They don't need to have the final plan now, and everybody should be able to make their case for why they want their version.
Do you think if like the Pelicans were the 28th, you know, worst team in the league, that the NBA would be considering a 2018 playoff?
You think it's to get Zion?
They just want Zion in the thing. And it's funny, you mentioned the politicking that's been going on. We saw it with Dame Lillard, right? He's out there saying that if my team doesn't have a chance at the playoffs, then I'm going to be sitting there on the bench. It's like, well, those first 60 some odd games that of which you only won 29, those games exist. Those games happened. And you also, and even while this is a completely unique situation, you also signed a contract. And if you were to just sit out games willingly, it's at some point you'd get fined. Now, I don't think the NBA would ever, or the Trailblazers especially, would ever tell Dame, well, fine, if you don't want to play, give us a portion of that money back, right? It would have to be a league-wide decision that if a player considers it unsafe, so unsafe that they don't want to participate in this thing, then they would make 30% or 40 or 50% of what they would make over what would be left of this season to this point, right? They're going to get paid for the amount of games that they've played so far. And because we want to make it as understanding of players who have legitimate safety concerns, while also understanding that, hey, we're also taking a loss here. At some point, I wonder if the NBPA and the owners are all going to come together and try to negotiate how much a player is going to get if they don't participate in these games moving forward, or if there's going to be any kind of giving back at all. You know, that's something that's going to be worth watching too. But you know, if and. Like you said earlier, I think politicking is a perfect way to put this. That was Dame politicking for the 20-team setup, right? Mm-hmm. I'm only going to go out there. You're only going to get my stardom on the court if we're in on this stage, this group stage thing, if you know, we go in that direction.
It's all they've got to trade and to barter on. But one thing I will say is, like, a team like Memphis, they should be rewarded for 65 games into this season having a lead, right?
Yeah.
Now, should that mean they get an automatic playoff spot? That's okay if you don't think that that's the case, that there should be some play in, but in that play in, they should have some advantage, right? Mm-hmm. And in the absence of home court advantage, what does that look like? Is there some sort of, they get a, you know, you play a 5-game tournament or something, and they start out with one or two wins, right?
Yeah.
And what does that look like? There's a way to make it fair to adequately represent the games that were played. Because just like you said, those games did matter. If yeah. Dame was planning on going nuclear for the last 20 games of the season, which totally could have happened,
yeah.
that's great and all. But what you did do in the first 65 has got to matter a lot, right?
Yeah.
And if you weren't quite there, it should be reflected in how they proceed going into the playoffs.
That's one, I think that might be an argument in an indirect way for the group stage idea in mm-hmm. that. So if you do 1 through 16, you know, that's the cutoff, right? And if you expand it to 1 through 20, well, then you are now taking away from, you're giving an advantage to teams that didn't earn it. But if you do this group stage thing, I don't know, do you pay much attention to World Cup soccer?
I've always liked the World Cup, but I'm so ignorant on soccer, man. I don't want to speak out of turn, but you get like 3 points for a win,
right.
one for a tie, and mm-hmm. goal differential, I think, is, mm-hmm. And obviously no ties, but point differential would be something that would be, could be done in the NBA.
Yeah. Right. Well, if they do this group thing and they increase it to the 20 teams that would all participate in this group stage, you could award the teams, the 1 through 16 teams, you can give extra points going in so that those teams at the bottom of the group would have to, really outperform the teams that are ahead of them in on the group heading in. It's just something that kind of came to mind as we were talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's take another quick second here. And when we come back, we are going to dive into a fun what if that existed purely. You want to know where this idea came from?
Oh, yeah. You called me while you were driving, which was very weird. I'm like, why is Anthony calling me?
Yeah I know. So I was driving around because, you know, we're out here in Texas. My parents are thinking about moving out here, and they have me driving all over looking at areas for them. Mm-hmm. At some point, Mom and Dad, you're going to owe me a real realtor's fee. But so I was driving around, and I had Bill Simmons' podcast on there. And he was talking about how it was ridiculous to even consider that Michael Jordan would ever play with the Lakers. So I figured we'd go in the opposite direction.
There you go.
I want to talk about it. So just to spit on the BS report here in a little bit, we're going to talk about what if Michael Jordan played on the Lakers. Today's show is brought to you in part by Blinkist. Let me tell you about my secret weapon for learning new things and getting ahead. It's hard to find time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There is, however, an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique. It works on your phone, tablet, web browser, whatever. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get to the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are already using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library. From self-help, business, to health, or history books, Blinkist has the latest titles from the bestseller lists. As the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had the time to. I use Blinkist whenever I'm driving. I've done a ton of driving, as I just said earlier, because my parents have me driving around all over Texas, and I've used Blinkist any number of times to pass the time during those drives, and you can too. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. All right, so let's frame it this way. Michael Jordan retires in 1998, in large part because Phil Jackson was no longer going to move forward with the Chicago Bulls, and he never wanted to play with or for another coach, Right. He said that. Remember, Shaq also said the same thing. I don't think Phil gets enough credit for players, superstars, saying this about him.
Yeah, get like someone of that level to really stand up for you. Right. Yeah, that's a huge thing.
So Phil Jackson would wind up taking a year off and come back in the 99-2000 season with the Lakers, right? Or is it the year after?
He came out in the 99-2000 season.
Yeah. So he takes a year off, comes back in 1999 for the 1999-2000 season with the Lakers. What if he just comes right back? What if he just hops immediately? Like, have you seen Any Given Sunday, right?
Is that the Pacino one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Life is a game of inches. I don't know why Irish or whatever. Yeah. Anywho.
You're trying to do the rasp and it turned into, yeah.
Oh, hi. I'm watching a lot of Peaky Blinders. So let's say he pulls an Al Pacino and goes to the Lakers and brings Michael Jordan with him. I want you to just go into what would have had to happen here, because the cap was a little different back then. And the context behind the decision on what if Michael Jordan follows Phil Jackson to the Lakers the year immediately following Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf pulling one of the most egregious breakings of the rules of professional sports that we have ever seen. So let's just go that way, because I think that's a good starting point for why this actually could have happened.
Yeah. So the cap situation is that the Lakers have so it's a $30 million cap. Jordan had just signed was just playing for $33 million.
Yeah.
Or so. Right. Mm-hmm. So Phil is the foundation of the why, right? Of like, why is this something that Jordan would be willing to do? And then, so from there, like it becomes like, how, right? How do we go about executing this? And it's probably a trade of like Eldon and maybe Ori or maybe Eddie, right? Mm-hmm. It depends. It'd have to be a sign and trade because Lakers didn't have cap space. But it'd have to be a sign and trade. And then it becomes, how does Phil introduce, you know, Kobe and Jordan and Shaq into the triangle offense? That's what's super interesting about this to me, is because Jordan had moved toward, Jordan played more and more of the Shaq role. So first off, let's back up on like what the triangle offense is in the very short, you know, can do this over podcast without visuals type of way. The two main scoring spots in the triangle offense are the low post and then the pinch post, right? The low post being by the basket. You'd always see one guy on the wing on the free throw line extended, one guy in the corner. They'd make the entry pass into the post and then they'd cut off of him, right? That was the Shaq role. And that was Jordan increasingly as he got older. So we're talking about older Jordan here, right? And then the other spot is on the opposite side of the court at the elbow where the free throw line and the lane line meet. And that was something Jordan would move between one or the other. With the Lakers, Kobe would move from kind of the Pippen role into the pinch post role as well. So Kobe was kind of like a Pippen-Jordan hybrid in terms of responsibilities, whereas Jordan was kind of the Kobe and Shaq hybrid, right? Of he would fill that low post spot, but also that pinch post spot. My question would be like, where does Kobe go? And what is Kobe doing? Is he coming off of screens? Is he'd have to be setting a lot of screens. How happy is he within that? So the Phil component of that would be why Jordan would come, but then there, the details of how that would work would be very fascinating, because I don't think Kobe would be thrilled with kind of that third option, even at 20 years old. That's in the opposite direction of where he wanted to go, right? He wanted to prove his worth as the man and as an equal to the superstars of the game. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to it that are pretty fascinating.
Yeah, so eventually that season is when they traded for Glenn Rice, right? They traded Eddie Jones, Eldon Campbell, essentially for Glenn Rice. And they would eventually have, so Shaq made $15 million that year. Glenn Rice made $5.2 million. Robert Horry made $5 million. B.J. Armstrong, I believe, was a part of that trade, but was essentially waived immediately. This was all to make room to be able to sign Shaq or to continue to build around Shaq. They had acquired Shaq earlier. And, you know, my question here from a human standpoint and understanding what kind of made Jordan tick, I actually think there's a chance that this actually could have happened if the Lakers had nailed the machinations of signing or trading for Michael. And it's fairly simple, right? Krause, throughout that documentary, which, you know, it needs to be pointed out, A, it wasn't really a documentary, and B, a huge chunk of it, or if not the entirety of it, was mm-hmm. Michael telling the story, right? Mm-hmm. So it was going to make the people that Michael doesn't like, he was going to make them look as bad as possible and make him look as good as possible. But all that said, there's that one clip that really stuck out to me where, you know, they had just won a championship and the person interviewing him says, you know, how special is this? How special is this team? And Jerry Krause immediately says, well, it's the organization, right? It's mm-hmm. it's a world-class organization. And that's the kind of thing where if I was Michael Jordan and I saw that interview, like that should have been another meme, quite frankly, right? Mm-hmm. It was his response to Jerry Krause saying that it was an organizational thing and not a Michael Jordan thing and not a Michael mm-hmm. Jordan and Scottie Pippen thing or and not a Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen and Phil Jackson thing. Mm-hmm. If Michael felt slighted, and we know he did, just based off of the last clip of that, right? He chose mm-hmm. to end this 10-part documentary that countless hours went into, not with like some, this was my career, this is how I stand, you know, maybe I have a couple regrets, but overall, I can't really complain about being arguably the greatest player in the history of the NBA. He spent the entirety of that montage kind of pissed about the fact that they didn't get a chance at number 7. Mm-hmm. And
he has the right to be. Very much so.
Fuck yeah, he does. I felt myself angry. I was so offended on behalf of the Chicago Bulls fans who were there at that parade. I felt awful for him. That was probably mm-hmm. in a documentary that featured a lot of like, oh man, I really feel for X guy or whichever guy. The people I felt the worst for were those fans that were there at that parade chanting one more year, right? Knowing how that turned out. It's kind of like the moments leading up to the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones, where it's just like beautiful, you know, pure young love kind of thing. And you're like, yeah, this is probably not going to end well because you know what happens in the Red Wedding. But if Phil says, you know what, Krause, fine, have your organization, right? You know what, Reinsdorf, you say it wouldn't be fiscally responsible to bring Michael back, to bring Scottie back, to bring the gang back. Fine. Have at it, you cheap ass. Hey, Michael, let's go to LA. Let's let you, because I don't think Michael would have had to win much more than one championship, I think. Mm-hmm. I think if he wins one championship outside of Chicago, he gets to ride out into the sunset, middle fingers up in the direction of Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf. Mm-hmm. And if Phil is able to sell it to Kobe, like, hey, we really feel the need to do this, let's just try, let's make this work this one year. And you get to watch Michael Jordan up close. You get to learn from the GOAT, the guy that you're already emulating anyway. You get to learn from this guy up close and see what kind of role that you want to carve out for yourself in the triangle. And we get to win this one championship. And then from there, you know, Michael gets to sail off into the sunset. I think that's how this thing gets sold. And I actually think, given how spiteful we know Michael to be, I think it actually could have gotten done. I really honestly do.
Yeah, I think it could. But then why didn't, I mean, do you think it was just because Phil? Like, why didn't MJ play anywhere?
Because Phil took a year off.
You think that if Phil
it was also that like weird truncated year, remember?
Right.
It was like the lockout year and look, like we how many years after the fact was this? It was like 30 years after the fact, right? Or 20 years after the fact?
Mm-hmm. 20. Mm-hmm.
20 years after the fact. Did you see the pain on Michael's face? Like as he was hearing Jerry Reinsdorf explain this for the first time apparently ever. Yeah. Right. Did you see the pain on his face? As it like,
yeah.
That's
rightfully so.
I kind of understand why he spent a year away from it. Right. He's like, I reached the pinnacle of the sport and I am the most famous athlete maybe ever. Right. And yet I wasn't able to use my leverage to keep this group together and ride it out to its natural end, its organic end. And if I were Michael, I could totally understand him saying at that point, I don't want to kowtow. I want to play for Phil and nobody else and fuck this league because of what apparently it did to me.
Sure.
But if Phil says, you know what, Michael, let's do this. Let's go to LA. This is where I'm going to go anyway. Let's go here. You get to win number 7. It gets to be without all those other guys. It can be for this franchise, right? That is known for cherishing its stars, for loving its stars, treating its stars properly. Let's send a message that this is the reason I'm going here is because the Lakers understand how to do that. And all I've wanted all along is to feel properly valued.
So why not do that when he did come back with the Wizards?
Like with the ownership stake.
Right. And so, I mean, in some ways, was he not terribly motivated to come back at all? Because you could say that, you know, Michael Jordan buys ownership in the Wizards, then Michael Jordan increases the value of the Wizards by playing for the Wizards, right?
A brilliant business move.
Yeah, it is a brilliant business move.
Buy low.
Right.
And then play for a little while and sell high.
But I think it's also indicative of what he was motivated by at that point, rather than like he didn't come back to, you know, give a middle finger to Jerry Krause or Jerry Reinsdorf or anything like that. He came back as a businessman in his later years to sell tickets, and there was never any compulsion. If he wanted to go somewhere and win a title without Reinsdorf or Krause, he could have picked wherever he wanted to go if he was willing to play for a certain amount. And most teams, if they had to clear cap space for him, they would have moved heaven and earth to get Michael freaking Jordan. Because not only for the basketball reasons, but they would have enjoyed the business reasons, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to sell out every game if he plays for your team. So I just don't think that MJ had it in him at that point to do it for basketball reasons rather than business reasons. And I think that at the end, as enticing as that would have sounded, and Lakers probably chipped at least once, right? Yeah. I just don't think that's where Michael was coming from in the first place.
So I want to end it on this because I find this is one of the more interesting kind of details of what this might have looked like. We've talked about how maybe Magic talked some sense into Kobe about valuing Shaq, right? And Shaq into valuing Kobe and how the, you know, maybe kickstarts their maturity a little early on so that it doesn't flame out in such public and humiliating fashion. I'm interested in what you think playing with Michael Jordan does for Kobe Bryant, the young player, the young man, and eventually, you know, the leader that he would wind up being.
Gosh, you listen to Kobe talk about Jordan and you see the adoration there, and so much about Kobe and his game come from that. And Kobe spoke to that in his episode in The Last Dance. So I think from an individual standpoint, it would have been both really rewarding and also really frustrating.
Yeah.
I would have loved for, you know, if the universe aligned and Kobe gets to experience Jordan when Kobe's like 18 and 19 years old, that would have been ideal, because I think that by the 99 season, the year before the Lakers won, which is when Jordan in this hypothetical would have joined, Kobe was on the precipice of being a star, and that was important to him. He wanted to be, it wasn't just about the Lakers. It was about his, you know, him being able to be the greatest basketball player that he could be. And I think Jordan would have gotten in the way of that, especially within the context of the triangle offense. So I think Kobe being able to pick MJ's brain on a day-to-day basis would have been incredible. But I also think that, I don't think Kobe resigns with us if Jordan's around. You know, I think he would have wanted to spread his wings.
Yeah, I mean, eventually Jordan would have had to depart.
Sure, right?
But I don't think he could have been around for long term. And Kobe sticks around. The only way I think this works is if it's a 1 year thing. Hey, let's go out, win this one championship.
Sure,
which by the way, they win. right? They win that. Yeah. Phil shows up a year earlier. You get Michael Jordan in there as well. They go out, they win that championship. Yeah. Anything beyond that, I think you're right. I don't think Kobe would have wanted to sit there with that glassy, not only because of the stuff you talk about, but also because of like the impact that Michael has on his teammates, just in the analysis of the teams he plays on. Right? Mm-hmm. We saw it already with Pippen. We saw it with Kukoc. We saw it with Horace Grant, that these, even Dennis Rodman, right? These great, great, great players who had made very real and very stated impacts on the teams that won those championships, they kind of, you know, got lost in the noise of this documentary because of the myth of Michael Jordan. And And I think Kobe dealing with that, I don't think he deals with it particularly well, even in that 1 year span, but definitely in the you know, if it was to extend beyond that 1 year.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on the money with that.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. You know, we have some fascinating stuff that is still continuing to take shape. So, you know, as you've kind of noticed, I would imagine, we are moving a little more off of the quote-unquote off-season or hiatus-type content to be able to make way for the day's news, which I'm welcoming with open arms because I enjoy talking about new stuff. But as we need to, we will dip back into that bag of tricks as well. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Hop on over to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to save $10 off that first order. Be safe out there, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.